Welcome to Week, the political roundtable from the Commonwealth Club of California for Wednesday, January 14th, 2015. Thank you to everyone for joining us here today in San Francisco. I'm John Zipper, the Commonwealth Club's Vice President of Media and Editorial, and your host for Week to Week. On today's special program, we are going to explore the results of the Golden State poll, and we've got a panel of three of the Hoover Institution experts who worked on it. We're also going to find out if they're in sync with you. As usual, any opinions that are expressed here are those solely of the speakers and not necessarily of the Commonwealth Club. So let's meet our panelists for today. I'm going to start on the far end of the stage there with Lonnie J. Chen, the David and Diane Steffi Research Fellow at the Hoover Institution. He's also a former policy director for the 2012 Romney-Ryan presidential campaign. Next to him is Carson Bruno, Research Fellow at the Hoover, and he specializes in California's political and policy landscape. Next to me is one of our old hands here on the week-to-week panels. It's Bill Whalen, a research fellow at Hoover, also a political blogger at adayattheracesblog.com. All of them are on Twitter. I encourage you to find them and follow them. And please use the question cards that are spread throughout the room to write down and submit questions. I'll do my best to get as many asked as possible during the program. Now on to our roundtable. As I said, this is a special edition of week-to-week. As we start a new year, and Governor Jerry Brown begins his fourth and probably final term in office. Only time will tell. It's a perfect time to take the political pulse of the state. Just over a week ago, Governor Brown gave his State of the State speech, showing his current penchant for conservation by combining it with his inauguration speech. He claimed credit for a number of initiatives for his just completed term in office, and of course he outlined what he saw as priorities for the state going forward. So we're here with these folks, and we want to explore just what they found by talking to Californians. I want to start, actually. Bill, give us a bit of a background on this poll. Why do you do it? How do you do it? What's the purpose of it?
Thanks, John, and thank you all for coming out tonight. I was watching a Frontline special on Putin last night. I don't know if you caught it or not, but really it was a terrific show. And I was especially fascinated with how Putin took term limits and managed to get kicked out of office and turned around and managed to get himself an additional 8-year stay as a head of Russia. I started wondering, how can Jerry do this between now and 2018? I'd like to, first of all, mention two people before we get into the nitty-gritty of the poll. One is the woman holding the camera right there, Jenny Mayfield, who is the director of media relations at Hoover, and she and John are responsible for pulling this off tonight. So thank you, Jenny, for arranging that. And then secondly, Dr. Tammy Frisbee, who some of you might have seen on this stage previous times. Tammy is sort of the processor of our poll. She puts the data together, she draws it up for us, and she crunches the numbers for us. She cannot be here with us tonight, and by the time you see her, she'll probably be a new mother. She is coming close to delivering. So, Tammy, if you're listening on the podcast, we miss you and hope you're doing well. About the poll, we are now in our second year of doing the Golden State poll out of Hoover. It is done in conjunction with an internet firm in Palo Alto called YouGov, Y-O-U-G-O-V. You might recognize the name. They partnered with CBS News during the presidential during the 2014 cycle and did polling for the New York Times. They did the Senate races, the congressional races, gubernatorial races, and they do our poll for us. And our sample, I think, Lonnie and Carson, was about 1,700 Californians across the whole specter, left, right, center, young and old. And what we do this four times a year. And our survey is two parts. The first part is economics, which Lonnie will talk about, and the second part, which Carson will talk about, is policy. We want to know, first of all, Californians' financial well-being, sort of a real-time answer to the Ronald Reagan's question, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And then secondly, we want to get into policies which are related to the here and now. So this being the first poll of this year in January, the obvious choice was to ask questions related to Governor Brown's speech in Sacramento last week. And what we want to do is get an idea of the governor's stated preferences in his speech versus the preferred policy choices by Californians. And if you look at the survey, that's what you'll see. You'll see Californians ranking 21 issues of greatest importance to them. So pretty interesting findings.
Great. Well, let's talk about, and the questions you asked kind of break down into a number of areas, but a big chunk of it is economic. I wanted to start with you, Lonnie. And it's economic both in terms of how the Californians see their own economic performance, and both for the past year and going forward, as well as what they see as the state's performance and want how what sort of priority. Lonnie, give us some detail on this. What are Californians thinking?
Well, again, thank you for this event. Thank you for all coming tonight. I think what we try to do when we conceived the poll, and this is, as Bill said, the fourth iteration we've done now of this poll, we really wanted to get a sense for what we call the economic confidence of California citizens. We're really curious about how people perceive their own economic situation, because ultimately that's the biggest measure that's important, both in terms of political, political outcomes, but also policy outcomes. And so what we try to do is to replicate the same questions so we're able to get a sense over time as to how people feel about the economy. And so we do ask the same questions over and over again. And the four questions that we repeated on this survey largely focus on people's impressions of their personal finances over the course of the last year and then looking ahead for the next 6 months, how they personally feel about whether they are financially better off, about the same, or worse off. And you know what we find pretty consistently, actually across the last couple of surveys we've done, the finding is that most people feel like they're doing pretty much the same as they were a year ago, that there hasn't been a lot of movement with respect to their economic situation. It's gotten a little better, of course, as the unemployment rate has come down and public perceptions of the economy have improved. We have seen slight movement toward people who believe that they're about the same, you know, about the same place, as opposed to that they're worse off financially than they were before. Another question we ask, which is interesting, is do people think they could find another job relatively easily that pays the same? You know, if they were to leave their current job, how confident are they that they could find another job that's very similarly situated? And what we find is actually most people think that they would be able to do that with some measure of ease in this economy. So that suggests that people's impressions of their own financial situation have improved, which is certainly a positive thing. In terms of the performance of the state as a whole, I think most people feel in general as though the state is doing better. We do find some interesting data as you dig in a little bit and look based on race and ethnicity. We actually find in our sample that African Americans and Latinos are more likely to say that they believe the economy has gotten better for them financially as opposed to our white and Asian respondents. So, you know, there are some interesting data that we can get into as we dig into this a little bit, but overall I would say that for the most part, Californians remain deeply concerned about economic issues, but they do tend to think that their personal financial situations are either the same or potentially better than they were a year ago.
The thing you just brought up about different ethnic groups kind of for seeing how their own performance has been, any sense of why that is? I mean, have the sectors that traditionally are stronger in African-American employment, for example, have they gotten better? I mean, do we know why they might have done that?
So we don't dig in by sector. What I will say is that there's a couple of issues driving the current state of the economy where we are. One is the unemployment rate, which is how most people tend to judge the health of the economy. The unemployment rate is a complicated measure because there are any number of different factors that can go into what's happening there. And the unemployment rate doesn't necessarily measure a concept known as underemployment, where people are taking, they have jobs, but they're taking jobs that maybe are not a fit for their educational or experience set. A related question is wage stagnation or how wages have been. And, you know, nationally, what we know is that wages have been relatively stagnant during this economic recovery. So, you know, the best theory one can have is that there is something around this combination of the fact that while there are more jobs, there may not be the kinds of jobs that people want or expect. But it would be interesting to see if we could dig in a little more maybe in a future poll.
Sure. For any of you, really, that when we looked at these list of topics that you put forward as possible priorities for the state and ask people how they would rank them. I believe three of the top four were all economic related in one way or another. How does this differ, or is it in line with what we're hearing from the governor?
Any of you? Sure, that is true. We asked in both this poll, but also last year, right before the State of the State address, what the top priorities would be for Californians going into the State of the State address. And we crafted these 21 concepts or policy issues around what Pew Research Center does around their State of the Union poll that they also do, but tailoring them for California. And it runs the gamut from tax reform to dealing with global climate change. But what we found consistently, both this year but also last year, is that the top issues are really kind of the bread and butter issues, the dealing with the strengthening the state economy, improving the job situation, balancing the budget. This year kind of came out of nowhere in respect to how it polled last year, was dealing with the state's water problem. Yeah. And this isn't that big of a surprise given the amount of attention paid to the drought, the Prop 1 campaign from the November. So that, you know, that went from being the 11th ranked top priority in 2014 to the second top priority in 2015. So what you're seeing, again, you know, it's really kind of coming back down to the economy and coming back down to the job situation. In respect to what Governor Brown said just last week, you see a little bit of a disconnect. You know, he spent a significant portion of his State of State slash inaugural address talking about combating climate change. And what we find here in our poll is dealing with climate change really is one of the lowest lowest ranked top priorities among Californians. And so you kind of see a little bit of a difference between what Californians are really expecting out of Sacramento and then what the governor is really pushing ahead with.
And you recently wrote something in which you addressed that, why that might be, because California is known as I mean, has been from Governor Schwarzenegger and Governor Brown, both put us in a leadership position on many climate change issues. Why do you think Californians might actually be ranking it as a low priority?
Well, it's not necessarily a low priority, and that's what it's important when you look at the poll. What we're reporting out is the top priorities.
Yeah.
So only 26% of Californians rank dealing with climate change as the top priority. It still might be a priority to many Californians, and it absolutely is. But for a top priority, it might not be necessarily an issue for Californians because Californians really think we are already doing quite a bit on that front. And so it necessarily isn't something that they think more needs to be done.
Yeah, it's not a matter of urgency right now.
Exactly.
It's just saying, hey, we're already doing.
Exactly. Where, you know, the economy is, it's recovering, but not recovering at a very strong rate.
Sure.
And so that's always a top issue. Again, with the job market, it's recovering, but not recovering at a very strong, into a very strong position. And so that's really important. The interesting thing is the balanced budget still remaining as high up as it is. It's interesting because, you know, over the past year or so, Governor Brown has really gone out onto the road talking about how the budget has been balanced. So that remaining up there kind of shows that Californians still might be a little skeptical on what's happening with the budget.
And I mean, it shouldn't surprise us that economic issues are at the top. I mean, we all remember it's the economy stupid thing that Bill Clinton's politicos had, you know, stuck up on the wall when he was running for president. But from his speech, from Governor Brown, it wasn't all just the economy.
That's ideas related to climate change in the form of energy policy, the big three items, which he rolled out having to do with deadlines by 2020, and that's reducing fuel consumption by cars and trucks in California by 50% by 2030. It is also reducing building energy consumption by 2030, and then also increasing California renewable energy use, I think, from 33% to 50% by 2030. And he went out of his way to talk about this and link this into the global issue of global climate change. In a past life, I wrote State of the State speeches for Pete Wilson when he was governor. And I can tell you that there are basically two types of State of the State speeches. There is one that governors give in even number years, and those are speeches which are really directed at voters, because why? You're on the ballot, or something you want to get passed is on the ballot. So you're focus grouping ideas, and you're thinking what the public's going to vote come November. So you're appealing to them on those terms. Odd numbered year State of the States are very different animals. And there are State of the States that are written with the legislature in mind, given to the legislature, talking really on public camera to lawmakers. And that's what this speech was. The governor did talk about fiscal conservatism. He used the phrase actually after the speech. He said, though times are better, we have more revenue in California. He used the phrase precariously balanced to talk about the state's finances. So that's basically trying to throw cold water on people who want to spend a lot of money in the next few months in Sacramento. But in his speech, he also dangled a lot of very big, large, futuristic ideas. I suspect for this reason, so much of what happens in Sacramento is going to happen behind the scenes in the next few months. And it's going to be Jerry Brown sitting down with Janet Napolitano and coming to some deal, some agreement, some common ground on what to do about the University of California's financing system.
Who do you think will win?
I think they both will declare victory and retreat in this regard. the governor will hold his ground. There will not be tuition increases. More money will go to UC. I suspect she will respond in kind by offering some sort of reforms to how UC operates, and they both will, again, declare victory and step out of it. So that's one behind-the-scenes negotiation. Secondly, the governor in his speech said something lawmakers don't want to hear. He wants to go after pension reform in the under the guise of health care benefits for state workers. He wants to move it into a pay-as-you-go system. Lawmakers don't like that idea, so the governor is going to have to sit down with lawmakers and public employee unions and negotiate. Again, he'll do it in private, and they'll probably come to agreement. This is where things get very interesting. Jerry Brown has some capital at work, and that capital is the money he has left over from his campaign. He has about $15 million or so sitting around in the bank, and the question is, what does he do with it? So I suspect at some point when he's negotiating in private, he'll say, gentlemen, we have one or two ways to do this. We can work together and do it here in this room. This is how Arnold Schwarzenegger got workers' comp done when he first became governor. We can either do this in this room right now, or I'm prepared to go to the ballot with this. The clock is ticking. You decide. And I suspect that's how he'll try to get a deal leveraged. And then the third thing which he'll do behind closed doors is I think he'll make a decision, again, as to what he wants to do with that $15 million. And I suspect he'll probably want to go on the ballot and do something himself, because the other storyline coming out of Sacramento in 2015 is going to be this land rush of people all wanting to put things on the ballot for 2016, because the other side effect from the election, besides the governor having $15 million left over, the turnout for that election between Governor Brown and Neel Kashkari was so wretchedly low that it now takes about 366,000 votes to qualify an initiative. That sounds like a lot of people, but it's not in a state of 38 million people and growing. So you're seeing all sorts of ideas now that will come to fruition and go on the ballot in 2016. I would probably wager the governor will want to be part of that party as well.
There was one other thing that is sort of a signature program of this governor's, and it in the first question you asked about the priorities for the California state government, it ended up last. What was it? And it rhymes with high-speed rail.
High-speed rail continuously polls very poorly, especially coming off the decently strong, you know, Prop 1A that authorized the funding. In our poll, just 16% of Californians named that the top priority for Sacramento to focus on in 2015. Across the board, partisan boards, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Liberals, Conservatives, Moderates, it is the last ranked issue for pretty much every single demographic, which really goes to show, you know, Jerry Brown has really been pushing high-speed rail since day one, and it's an issue that really isn't resonating with voters out there.
Is that an issue where he, you know, I mean, there's the old line of, you know, I am their leader, I must follow them sort of thing. And then there is the leader who really does pull folks.
Right.
Is this an issue where he sees, you know, Californians may not want to go there or may not want to make this a priority, but I'm going to push it anyway? Or do you think he will be influenced by the lack of public enthusiasm?
I mean, I think it's been a personal priority for him for some time. And I think he's continued to put the emphasis on the issue. I think part of the challenge he has is that it's unclear the frame he wants people to see it through, right? Is it an environmental issue? In other words, you know, we all know that there are potential environmental benefits to high-speed rail. Is it a jobs issue, right? Sometimes he talks about it in terms of all the jobs this is going to create in the Central Valley in particular, which is the route of transit for the train.
Sure.
You know, is it an infrastructure issue? You know, are we trying to improve public infrastructure in a state where infrastructure is a very important thing? We all drive, we all spend time on the road, and we'd like to see better infrastructure. So, you know, is it an infrastructure issue? So I think part of the challenge for him is he's tried to sell this thing in so many different ways. I think he's got to decide on one and go for it. And, you know, chances are he won't be successful because this issue has already been framed in people's minds and people have an opinion about it. But, you know, I can't get much worse than it already is, as we saw in the poll now, and so I think he's only got up to go in that regard.
Let me add one more thing, John. Probably the biggest mistake you can do with Jerry Brown is try to read Jerry Brown's mind. That said, I'll now try to read Jerry Brown's mind. Jerry Brown is the son of Pat Brown, Edmund G. Brown Sr., and Pat Brown was the great builder of the 20th century of California governors, universities, water project, highways, freeways. Jerry Brown has that DNA in his blood. There's a fascinating documentary on the Brown family done by one of the, I think one of the daughters of Kathleen Brown, Jerry Brown's sister. She ran for governor back in 1994. I remember in it there was a quote from Kathleen Brown where she says, Pat Brown believed in doing big things as California governor. He saw it as a job where big ideas and big things were done, and he liked to build. Again, I believe that he carries his father's DNA, and I think at the time remaining in an office, he wants to do some big splashy things. He's constricted in a lot of ways. He's been constricted his first 4 years with state finances, and the fact that he ran in 2010 is really kind of a technocrat, a guy who's going to go in and fix the budget and the process to get the finances back in order. In the time remaining now, he wants to do some big ticket items. So high-speed rail sits there as one of those things. It is, to make up an adjective, it would be Brownsian, I suppose. And getting back to what I said about what to do with his money and put it on the ballot, I would wager that he will do an infrastructure measure. Why? It's a Brown-type thing to do. It also, from a political standpoint, he gets a lot of pressure from putting money into high-speed rail instead of, say, freeway transportation up the Central Valley. An infrastructure bond would suffice, get his critics off his back. So I think this is one of the reasons why he is so wed to high-speed rail. I think it's just the way governors named Brown look at California.
And infrastructure does pull well. I mean, yep. 45% name improving our roads, bridges, public transportation as a top priority. So that's fairly high up there in the group. The question is, going back to what Longhi was saying, does Jerry Brown really go out to Californians and really sell high-speed rail along the lines of infrastructure or jobs or even a climate change issue? That's it'll be interesting to see if he does that.
Yeah, that and taking that with what Bill had said about a lot of this stuff in 2015 is, you know, the governor in the closed rooms with the legislators trying to hammer things. I was going to say hammer things out, but really he's just going to hammer them to get to see it his way. If you are one of those Democratic, you know, Governor Brown, we were joking, he's not running again, but a lot of these legislators are. So are they, just kind of playing the politics of it, are they thinking, this is better off, I should get behind the governor, or are they thinking, yeah, you're not facing the voters in 2 years, I am. And do you think that might cause him some trouble, or do you think he's just going to, again, some people have political capital. You remember George Bush talking about, you know, I've got this political capital, and we're going to, whatever he was going to do, privatize Social Security or something. Governor Brown, his capital is actual capital. It's $15 million. So,
Between now and 2016, you get along with the governor. Why? The governor has a veto pen. That makes him the last word freak in Sacramento. He gets the last say by courtesy of that veto. Yes, in theory, the legislature could override a gubernatorial veto, but guess what? They don't have a two-thirds majority. They don't have a supermajority. They're a few votes shy. So most anything Brown vetoes, they will not be able to override. So you're going to have to negotiate with the man, better or worse. And you know, there are lame ducks, and then there are sort of lame ducks with a capital D. And he's not a lame duck with a capital D, really, until after 2016, when we really are focused on a successor. So for the next year and a half or so, lawmakers play nice with him. Besides, you have a lot of people in Sacramento right now who are distracted by such little trivial things as running for the Senate in 2016, which then creates this crazy game of musical chairs with other statewide offices. So there are just a lot of spinning plates and moving parts in that city right now.
We'll get into that later in the program because that's been a fun thing to watch. Let me actually ask some of you folks a couple of these questions. First of all, did you either watch or read the governor's State of the State speech? Did anyone raise your hand?
Yeesh.
Four people, five people maybe.
Well, one problem is it's not on TV in the Bay Area.
Example.
So yeah. Unless you're smart enough to find C-SPAN 2, you cannot have found it on TV.
Okay.
Problem number one.
Second, I'm going to list just a few of the options that, you know, when we were talking about priorities for state government. I'm just going to list a few of them. If you think it should be, let's say, the first or second top, you know, really high in the priority list, why don't you applaud? So the first one is, I'm going to list four of them, but the first one is strengthening the state's economy. Okay, the next one is dealing with our water problems. The third one is the high-speed train project. And fourth, let's say, dealing with global warming. This, of course, being the most scientific poll that's ever been conducted. Well, and yes, this is their poll, of course, was all across the state. You're Bay Area folks, and I know we have conservatives in the audience, but it is the Bay Area. Those results don't surprise me. We also had some questions out there that I think passed most folks by, but I want to try to maybe I'll just paraphrase these in a bit. The survey, and there are actually, I still think, some copies out there of the full survey results, so if you might want to grab some on your way out. But and it is great, because really, a lot of these things are broken down by age, by race, by obviously party affiliation. Party affiliation separate from then ideological affiliation. And I thought those were interesting sometimes to look at, how they did or did not match up. But so let me kind of paraphrase one other question here. They asked if you preferred to have the governor's office and the state legislature both controlled by one party, but not with a supermajority, so like we have it right now. So maybe applaud if you think that's the ideal setup. Or have your phone ring if you think that's the ideal setup. Nobody thinks that's the ideal. So our current setup is not ideal. Okay, so the other way would be, or one other way would be, the governor's office, state legislature, both controlled by the same party, but there is a supermajority. So what we had just a couple years ago. Applaud if you think that would be the best. Okay, there's another option. The governorship and the legislature controlled by different parties. That's a clear winner on that one. Okay. Well, very good. Let's see. This question I found really interesting. It was whether or not people thought they had been affected in the past year by any state government laws or public policy changes or changes in state programs. So applaud if you think you personally were affected by any changes in state law or public policy or programs. And if you do not think you were affected, applaud now. I'd say that's kind of stronger. As I recall from the survey results, it was pretty strongly people saying no, they did not think they had been affected. And I guess
it'll be interesting to see with the plastic bag ban this year whether that changes if we survey later in the year.
Yeah.
That I mean, relatively tangible way people's lives may change. Although here, I guess it's been that way for a while. I guess.
Yeah. So you said you've been doing this poll for about, this is the fourth one, and is it quarterly or yearly?
It's quarterly. It's actually the first poll. It's actually our fifth poll. Okay. It's the first poll in our second go-round of it, so 2-0 number one.
So what sort of feedback have you gotten from folks in Sacramento from these things?
Well, I think that there is a dearth of polling on California generally. You know, I think that there are a couple of outlets that have done polling, the Field Poll does California, the Los Angeles Times does a poll with USC, mm-hmm. The Dornsife School, which is the School of Letters and Arts down there. There may be another one I'm forgetting, but PPIC does something too. But so I think generally the more data we can get, the better. And so the reception, I think, has been relatively good. I think people like the idea that there's more data. And YouGov is a well-respected public opinion outfit, so it's not like, you know, we just got up one day and decided we were going to survey people in our pajamas. I mean, there was actually a rationale and a partner that we felt we could trust.
Sure. When you got these results back, what were the? I mean, were any of the results surprising to you, Lonnie? Or what was the most surprising?
No, I mean, I think pocketbook issues and economic issues tend to control in any polling you see now, whether it's national polling or state polling. I mean, those are going to be issues that people are going to care about. So in that sense, it didn't surprise me. You know, I think that I expected to see maybe a little bit more pessimism about the economic situation going forward.
I did too.
But I think in general, again, people's perceptions of the economy are in part shaped by the fact that unemployment rate has come down a percentage point in the last year, which is very substantial. Mm. And then there's this wage issue, which is sort of lingering, but it may not register in a poll because folks are really focused on the headline measures. So that would be one surprise, I guess, but it wasn't substantial.
Carson and then Bill, I mean, same question. What was either the most surprising or most noteworthy thing in the results?
No, I think what was most surprising for me, actually, wasn't anything on the priorities. The priorities seem kind of in line with what I'd expect, but it was on our who do you trust more, the governor, executive branch, or the state legislature? And actually, what surprised me the most was the plurality was not sure. About 40% said not sure, which that surprised me. Just looking at other polling that I've seen on a similar question, people usually have a good sense of whether they trust the governor or the state legislature a little bit more. So it seemed interesting that across the board, kind of the biggest chunk of people were really unsure about which way they're going to go.
I was kind of expecting on that question, which do you trust more, governor or the legislature, that you might have had Republicans more likely to trust the governor just because Governor Brown has been somewhat of a, you know, he was the guy holding back the Democratic tide, if you will.
This is why I hate to go last, because that's exactly what I was going to point out. Asked who they trust more, the governor or the legislature, Republicans went with the legislature.
Yeah.
Now, every Republican who runs statewide, of course, spends his or her time beating the snot out of the legislature, complaining about the horrors of the legislature. But yet, given the choice of the governor or the legislature, they went with the legislature. So maybe Republicans just deep down dislike Jerry Brown that much. The other thing that stood out, which I thought was interesting, was we asked a question about, do you think Governor Brown has been honest in his dealings with the budget? And the majority said yes, but it was 54%. Now, most politicians will take 54% and run with it because it's more positives than negatives. But this has been the trademark of his first term in Sacramento, and by most measures, he's been good to his word on what he said he would do in 2010, but only 54%. I think that's a function of one thing. The governor just spent $0, I mean $0 in advertising in November on his campaign. He did not run any ads trumping what he did in his first 4 years. The extent he went on television, it was to advertise on behalf of the water bond. So I suspect that 54% is a lot higher if he had spent $10 million, let's say, going on television and reminding people that he made good on what he said he would do in 2010.
Let me ask some questions here from the audience. Did the survey results reflect significant differences in the priority list or of economic well-being by region? Now, you'd already said you didn't break it down by region, but were there other, on the priority list, were there certain differences by different groups that stood out?
Well, you know, one of the things that we saw predictably is that there are certain issues based on partisanship that are much more important to some respondents and others. So, for example, illegal immigration is far more important to Republican respondents. There's a 15-point gap in terms of people ranking that as an issue that is a top priority between Republicans and Democrats. In a similar way, we see differences, subtle differences, in some cases more pronounced differences based on race and ethnicity. So, for example, there was much more interest amongst our Latino respondents in the quality of our education system. There was much more interest amongst our African-American respondents with respect to the Medi-Cal program and a few other elements relating to the social safety net in California. So, you know, you do observe those differences based on issue. Usually the most useful differentiation comes in the form of race and ethnicity differences or partisan differences. One thing I will note is that the issue of sort of the strength of the economy was the top issue for all of our respondents, with the exception of those aged 18 to 34. Amongst those voters, I believe water was the top issue. Is that right?
I believe so.
Yeah, water was the top issue amongst 18 to 34-year-olds, but for everyone else, it was the economy. So that's an interesting, maybe somewhat, I won't say, maybe it is a little counterintuitive, given that this economic recovery has been particularly uneven for people in that age category.
Yeah. Right.
On the regional question, I did break out the numbers on the job confidence question for a post that will be in Real Clear Markets tomorrow. And what I found there was naturally the Bay Area is the most confident in being able to find an equivalent job. If you work down to the southern coast, they're slightly on the more confident side. The Central Valley is the least confident. And you actually saw two clusters there of about 37% being in the not at all confident, another 34% in the somewhat confident. So you kind of see both sides kind of weighted, you know, this few who are confident about the job market in the Central Valley, and then an equal number kind of not confident at all in the job market in the Central Valley. So
if we do break up the state in six new states, we're going to be in the most confident state.
Yes,
come out of this
yes. Which is not surprising given the tech boom. I mean, it's really driving.
Silicon Valley.
That's right. Well, there are two questions here that touch on one of those priorities, which is pensions. So I'll just ask them. One is, are public pensions at the city, state, and county level a ticking financial time bomb? A related one, pension reform. Four or five cities have shut down financially. Why? So anyone want to discuss a bit about, and we maybe just get into the politics of pension reform? I think you had said this is going to be one of the things Governor Brown...
I mean, the answer is a ticking time bomb, yes. The state of California has what has been called the wall of debt, which is anywhere from, depending on who's talking about it, $200 billion to $500 billion, and much like the national debt, which is, what, $17 trillion, or I forget what now, there's really not a plan to pay it off right now. And pensions are part of this problem because we have put in very generous pension for public employees, and the state simply does not make enough money to pay off those benefits and meet its other budget obligations. So something has to give. This is why you see the governor now wading into this on health pensions as well. This is going to be a very contentious public debate over the next several years, not just on health, but other issues as well. And it's going to involve some serious belt tightening by Sacramento, some very hard decisions. And I'm not sure if the current lineup in Sacramento can deal with this or if it's going to have to go to the ballot. But if it goes to the ballot, there'll then be a question of who puts it on the ballot, how it is written, and because all ballot measures are ultimately public relations exercises, how it is portrayed to the public, and then how it fares at the ballot box.
Someone I think to watch in Sacramento is the newly installed state treasurer, John Chung, who was previously the state controller. He's really, in his 8 years as state controller, he really made the retiree health care unfunded obligations a real central component of his tenure. I imagine he'll continue that into his state treasurer tenure as well. So he's someone I think will be a strong voice moving forward in Sacramento, especially on the Democratic side.
Right.
To show that, I guess this is a good question for three Hoover folks. The result of Prop 30, tax increase on California's economy, what does this say about the theory of, quote, supply side, unquote, economics? Go for it.
Did we pull Prop 30 in this poll?
No,
we pulled in the last poll.
October.
What happened with that? What were the results?
We asked a question regarding the extension of Prop 30. And if I
And maybe quickly explain for those who don't know what Prop 30.
Prop 30 was the 2012 tax increase, income tax, sales tax increase, that Governor Brown really campaigned quite aggressively on, and it was passed by a large margin. I believe our October poll, and feel free to go onto hoover.org to confirm that, but the consensus was against extending it into the future. So that's something to kind of chew on. But
Right. And again, this will be a really interesting initiative battle in 2016 because the governor has not flat out said it, but he's given a pretty strong indication that he is not in favor of extending it. He sees it as a temporary tax increase. Parts of Prop 30 go off the board starting in 2016, then they go away fully in 2018. So the governor's kind of indicated he's not in favor of extending it. So part of the trick here will be how it's written. Will it be just another 4 or 5 year extension? Will they want to put it in law permanently? And if you extend it, do you continue it on the same formula, or do you tinker with it in terms of how it affects the budget?
What about the proposal to raise the state gasoline tax on the theory that with prices falling, now's the time to do it while people are giddy?
What I think will be interesting, the state is now doing a pilot program on a mileage tax, kind of replicating what Oregon is also testing out right now. And especially with Governor Brown's real push toward the electric car vehicle movement, policymakers are going to have to really figure out whether the gas tax is really past its time, and there needs to be some other way to fund infrastructure projects, because naturally an electric car is not going to be contributing at all to the gas tax.
I mean, I think part of it also will depend on what happens at the federal level, because there's been recent discussion with, you know, we have this highway trust fund issue every year or every couple of years. And so one of the proposals that's being seriously discussed now is an increase in the federal component of the gas tax, in part because of the current price of crude, which is great for consumers now, but is likely not to stay. I mean, my personal view is likely not to stay there forever. And so it'll be interesting if there's an effort to capitalize on that now at the federal level. Right. And that'll certainly affect the discussion in California.
Did the survey address housing? If so, what were the results? I believe you did not this time. Is that one you ever touched on?
No.
Or that would just be everyone in the Bay Area saying, arg.
Right.
Too expensive.
Okay. What are the chances that Jerry, let's really get into politics here. What are the chances that Jerry Brown will run for U.S. Senate or president again?
I would love to see him run for president. I think that'd be so much fun. I really do.
Why?
Well, because you know he's a kind of unplugged guy, right? And I think that would be a lot of fun if he ran for president.
I voted for him.
I think that he's got. Look, he was the most successful Democrat in the 2014 election cycle. I mean, I don't think that any other Democrat in the country can make an argument that they were as successful in their first in their previous term of office than Jerry Brown was. Mm-hmm. And he had a real case that he was able to work with Republicans, that he was able to work with independents to get some really tough things done. Yeah. And I think that that's a compelling thing to be able to say if you want to run for president. So I hope he does it.
There is a neat bookend thought here. Go onto YouTube sometime and type in Brown Clinton 1992 debate.
Oh, that's great.
Up come videos of Bill Clinton with this pest he can't get rid of named Jerry Brown, who is constantly offering an 800 number for campaign donations, we the people, but secondly, tearing into then-candidate Bill Clinton about how sleazy he thinks his wife is, getting into the Rose Law Firm. And you can see, it's like a cartoon, you can see Clinton's head just turning red by the moment, just ready to explode. So it would be very fun theater to watch Jerry go out and play a populist again and attack Hillary on those grounds. Hard to see. Here's the problem with him running for the Senate, especially in 2016. The governor of California becomes a United States senator. What happens to the office? It goes to the lieutenant governor. How many of you are familiar with the governor's relationship with the lieutenant governor? Not going to happen. Not going to happen.
On that same note, someone writes, Bill Whalen, you mentioned Kamala Harris and Gavin Newsom have the same manager eyeing Senator Boxer's seat. I guess you mentioned this in your blog.
Yes.
Okay. So what is the name of this political manager? And really, let's use that to jump into... Come on, let's talk Kamala Harris in the Senate race. What's
Somebody
going
reads
on?
My blog. Miracles continue.
Over here, that's my question.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, dear reader. Ace Smith, and he runs a firm called SCN, blah, blah, blah. Ace Smith's clients include Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom, and Antonio Villaraigosa,
wow.
Former mayor of Los Angeles, who, by the way, is also looking 2016. So those of us in politics who wear tinfoil hats and spend way too much time conspiring about this, think that Ace, I went to see The Godfather at the San Francisco Symphony over the weekend. Did you go too? It was great. And there's a scene in there where Tom Hagen, the conciliary, has to strike peace between the Tattaglias and the Corleones. And Ace Smith was sort of, I think, kind of the arbiter here, striking peace between the houses of Newsom and Harris. And it's all terribly orchestrated where Gavin announces he's running for governor. 23 hours later, Kamala's out announcing she's running for the Senate. Antonio is kind of in the weeds right now, trying to figure out what to do. He could run in 2018, but there are other Democrats looking at that race as well. So he's got at least three ponies in the hunt here as well. Watching the Democrats sort this out is fascinating because, first of all, it shows you that, unlike, say, in the national race, where it's Hillary Clinton and a bunch of obscure people who may later running for president on the Democratic side, in California we are just neck-deep, eyeball-deep, and Democrats lined up to run. This is what happened when offices don't become available for 25 years plus. But here's the trick for Democrats in 2016. You're committing a serious act of fratricide if you put more than two or three Democrats on the ballot. Why? There's about 50 to 60% of the ballot that's available to Democrats, and you do the math if you put five Democrats on there and start dividing. And by that, I mean Kamala Harris, Antonio Villaraigosa, Tom Steyer from here in San Francisco, maybe a one or two very young, ambitious members of Congress or state lawmakers. And they could put themselves in a position where they could seriously hurt the Democrats, put a Republican on the ticket in the runoff as well. So it'll be interesting to see how many of these Democrats end up in this race, and if the party, which of course is notoriously disorganized, if they can sort this out and put people in the races that make sense.
Okay, for any of you, have any Republicans been making noises about jumping into the Boxer seat race?
A few have, yes. It'll be interesting to see how much of them can gain traction. Two former state chairs have started to explore a run, Duff Sundheim and Tom Del Vaccaro. And State Assemblyman Rocky Chavez has started to kind of explore the option as well. So there will be Republicans running. It's a matter of how strong they are and then also whether the Democrats split the ticket enough where you could in the top two system. It's possible.
And not to mock them, but...
Not impossible, but...
Yeah, how many of you before just now have heard of any of those three Republicans?
I was going to say, the other challenge is that it's just a lot harder to raise money for a federal race because the contribution limits are so much lower.
Oh, are they?
So $2,700, $2,800 per person per election cycle, primary, general, in a federal campaign versus, I think, in a state, at least for governor, you're talking about $23,000, $24,000 limits per person. So the you're talking about a 10x difference between the fundraising difficulty or exertion between a federal race and a state race. So it's just, you know, it's going to be a lot harder for these Republicans to gain traction because they're just going to have it, unless they can self-fund, which none of those three can.
Unless they can what? I'm sorry.
Self-fund, unless they can provide their own funding that, like Tom Steyer would and could do.
Yeah.
It's going to be very challenging for them to get any kind of name identification at all.
Okay. Condoleezza Rice, anybody?
I'm pretty sure she's emphatically.
She said she's not going to. She's not going to run.
They see her in the cafeteria.
Yeah, she's not. She's not going to run.
Okay. Another person asks: given the concern, the water shortage and ongoing drought that we see, how do you see the governor moving forward on the new groundwater regulation, which could adversely affect the Central Valley, as well as fracking and renewable energy issues? So, water and.
I think there is a definite balance he has to make moving forward. On the water bond issue also, figuring out how the projects will be rewarded and then funded and moving forward, and then also on the groundwater issue, because the farming is a massive constituency in the Central Valley, but also it's an important constituency to the Democratic Party as well. There are a significant number of Central Valley Democrats who were central players in making sure that the water bond actually happened last November. So I think he's going to have to pay particular attention to what their constituencies are saying, and they will be at the table regardless of what Jerry Brown himself wants to do on that issue.
Very good. If you don't mind, can we get into digging more into some of the priorities that people had and what we can expect to see possibly in legislation. We obviously already talked about economics. Illegal immigration, it ranks fairly high, and I think you said it's higher among Republicans than Democrats. That's mostly a federal matter, though,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Brown has been a great, he signed a bill last year allowing driver's licenses, so I think he has a record there.
Yeah, it's in terms of border security questions, those are primarily federal concerns, there's not a whole lot the governor and the legislature can do about that.
Okay,
One thing that was interesting that was absent completely from his state address was reforming the tax code, the tax system, which is across the board. Everyone thinks it's bad in California. It's very volatile. It's very problematic for budgeting purposes. It creates lots of problems in economic downturns. That then usually education and other social services, all the things on the chopping block. So it's interesting that it was absent from his state of state, particularly because newly elected state senator Bob Hertzberg, who was assembly speaker when he was in the assembly and now is in the Senate, he's kind of made that an issue, a singular issue of his since he left the assembly. And now he's back in the state Senate and really likely gunning for a leadership spot in the future.
When you say reforming the state tax system, specifically, are we talking Prop 13 being revisited, or
I think that'll be on the table, particularly amongst a strong constituency in the state legislature. Yeah. Whether Jerry Brown wants to go down that route is another issue. I think Bill mentioned. Right. I think that's more likely along the lines of you'll see it on a proposition.
Right. One thing you would look at is the state of California has become incredibly reliant upon personal income tax. And when you have a 40 to 50 to 60% growth in the market, times are good for California. But as Gray Davis showed, Arnold Schwarzenegger showed, and may happen yet to Jerry Brown, he hopes to get out of office before having this happen, a bull market eventually becomes bearish. It goes bust, the economy goes south, and you're faced with a recession. And this is what Brown meant when he talked about the budget being precariously balanced. It's like driving your car down the highway competing with the train. Spending is the train in your car. Is revenue, and you're trying to keep up pace with the train. Government continues to grow relentlessly. A third of the state right now is on state Medicaid, by the way. This is with Obamacare coming through. A third of Californians are now tied up through state Medicaid. So you're in a race to provide the revenue to fund the government. You can't rely on being 60 to 80% dependent on income tax on revenue, so tax reform has to be a discussion about how to broaden and deepen the revenue stream without just being reliant upon people hitting it big in the stock market each year.
You mentioned the healthcare issue, and I am one of the five people here who did go through his speech. He did talk about that and the forthcoming costs that are going the state will increasingly have to deal with. If nothing else, I guess just further saying to the legislature, back off.
Exactly.
We've got other spending. One thing that ranked, I think, pretty low It was only what listed, I guess, a top vote by, 26% of the people considered it a high priority, if I'm reading this correctly, was the reforming the state's prison system. The governor addressed that as well, and he noted, you know, the drop in, or the, excuse me, the increase in prison inmates and prisons since he had his first go-around at the office in the 70s. Any prospect for change there, or are we just going to continue to see, them dealing with the federal mandate to reduce prison?
Yeah, I mean, the challenge is that the policy solutions, unfortunately, all have pretty strong constituencies. The potential policy solutions all have pretty strong constituencies that would be against them in, mm-hmm. in some respects. So, you know, there's been discussion in the past of trying to privatize some element of our correctional officer corps. That's been opposed, obviously, by the correctional officers and the Correctional Officers Union. The construction of additional beds, just basically the construction of additional prisons, is very expensive, and we haven't had the capital to commit to that kind of a situation in a while. The discussion of sentencing reform has been opposed by some conservatives. Issues around promoting greater rehabilitation efforts to prevent recidivism, that's also been opposed because we haven't had the funding for it. So, any number of different potential options to deal with that issue unfortunately haven't come to pass, which is why we've gotten into this really sticky situation of, we have massive prison overcrowding. We're under 3 or 4 federal decrees right now to deal with the situation involving incarceration in California. And it's very difficult to see how this, will continue, because you also have complaints that too many offenders are being pushed into local and county jails as opposed to being in state prison. So that dynamic's also kind of lingering in the background. It's a very, very tricky issue to deal with.
I know about this next question because I saw it on The Daily Show, but someone writes, since 2006, if I'm getting this name correct, Lloyd Pendleton, the director of Utah's Homeless Task Force, has been implementing what they're calling the most effective solution to end homelessness to date. By giving the homeless homes, the state of Utah saves, I'm not sure if they're giving an amount, he does claim to be saving money, and of course those get off the street and are able to kind of get home and services in a new home. So they're asking, when is California government going to test this idea?
When the price of a home is less than $1,400 a foot in San Francisco, $1,200 a foot in Palo Alto.
Yeah, they're not going to be giving away homes in the Marina.
That's what it comes down to.
Well, it would be natural for that issue. Soon-to-be gubernatorial candidate Gavin Newsom. If I remember our history correctly, homelessness is the issue that brought Gavin Newsom to the forefront of San Francisco, so maybe he adopts that in a statewide platform.
Cash not care.
Cash not care,
cash
right?
Cash not care, yeah, we all remember that. Care not cash? Okay. I think we don't all remember it right.
Cash and carry.
Okay. Lonnie, you wrote something in where you were getting into the details mm-hmm. of this, and you mentioned on some racial and ethnic group differences. You said 76% of Asian respondents concluded that reducing crime was a top priority. It was just 40% of white respondents,
right.
48% of black respondents, and 53% of Hispanic respondents. Any thoughts on why that might be?
Well, so one of the things I'll say is that in the Asian language media, there tends to be more coverage of crime incidents than in the English press. Again, we didn't test the reasons why this was the case, so I can't give you an exact statement of X causing Y. All I can tell you is that I think that is probably one factor. And in general, I think if you look at surveys where there are enough Asians to make a difference, the challenge with surveying Asian American population generally in most of these surveys is that you just don't get a sample large enough to draw any meaningful conclusions, right? So when you have a national, perfect example is when you think about a national exit poll survey after an election, the sample of Asian voters you get is so small it's difficult to make meaningful distinctions. One of the advantages in our surveys, actually, I think we did have a relatively significant number of Asian respondents, just in terms of the raw percentages. But, mm-hmm. That's all to say that I think part of it is the coverage, and part of it may just be that in general, if you look at surveys on Asian Americans or that involve Asian Americans, crime tends to rank as a higher issue intrinsically And so you do have some of that bias in the survey research.
I occasionally throw in my Chicagoisms here because that's where I'm from. But there was a longtime columnist there for the Chicago Tribune and before that for the Sun-Times called Mike Ryko. You might have heard of him. And he at one point suggested people lie to pollsters when they come out of the survey. After they do their voting, tell them they voted for the other person or whatever.
And what is Mike Ryko's connection to California politics?
I do not know.
He is the gentleman who first wrote the words Governor Moonbeam.
Really?
Yes. He gets the credit for that.
What about Ron Santo?
Well, that'll be next time. We're going to the sorry state of Chicago baseball. I'm sure you'll all want to be there. Let us wrap up tonight's program with our live news quiz. Now, those of you who have been here before know how we do this. For those of you who haven't, and if I can find my questions, we'll actually do it. Yes. For those of you who haven't, let me briefly explain. I'm going to ask a question, and if you think you know the answer, raise your hand. Oops. And I'll call on you, shout out the answer if you're right. We're going to give you a nice little bag of Ghirardelli chocolates. If you're wrong, we're going to hang our heads in shame. We'll ask someone else. Okay, so let's start. I wanted to get into the spirit of the California questionnaires here, so let me start with a few California questions. Within $1,000, what is the per capita income for Californians? Does anyone want to take a guess, or does anyone know? Sir? Sorry? No. I'll tell you it's lower than that. Sir? No. Lower than that. Ma'am in the... No. Sir? 48? No. Let's take one more. Nope. It's 29,527. That's the California per capita income. Nationwide, it's 28,155. You get higher numbers, of course, when you talk about household income. And there you're closer to the high 50s and the 60s. And, of course, in San Francisco, it's like 12 million. Next question. In a speech this month, who cited Gaspar de Portola, Edward O. Wilson, and his own Jesuit training? Sir, I can't give you all chocolate, so let's just go on to the next question. It was Governor Jerry Brown, yes. What did actress Naya, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, Naya Rivera say was, quote, a white thing, unquote? Did any of you see this was in the red? Showers, daily showers. Go ahead and give her chocolate.
Wow.
This was on The View, and she said people who shower daily or more than once a day. It was a white. I can't explain it. Did we get chocolate to the other whoever won that the first question? Was that okay? Why is John Boehner's former bartender in deep legal trouble, sir? He was going to attempt to kill him. He was going to poison him or otherwise kill the Speaker of the House. Gentleman over there on the other end wearing the baseball cap. Okay, next question. Sir, raise your hand so he knows where you are. Okay. Charlie Hebdo, the French satirical publication at the center of the terrorist attack that rocked Paris last week, normally prints about 60,000 copies. How many copies of its current issue...
She got it.
Ma'am, I'm sorry they raised it. So it is. Sir, 5 million. Gentlemen there.
Wow.
Yeah, they kept pushing up the number. And it sold out in its first day. They're selling copies on eBay for like several thousand dollars.
Wow.
If we had asked the question yesterday, I think you would have been right. Because I just. Okay. Former President Jimmy Carter came to President Obama's defense after Mike Huckabee criticized the president for what, ma'am? Specifically, you know? Right, he was, you see, why don't you raise your hand so we can get you your chocolate? Mike Huckabee, a potential presidential candidate, criticized President Obama for letting his daughters listen to Beyonce. How many more do we have left in there? Okay, let's do a couple more here.
Devil music.
Why did a Florida school suspend commemoration of Religious Freedom Day? Did any of you see this story? Nobody? Did someone know that one? Okay. Because a group planned to hand out satanic coloring books to the kids. Okay, we'll get some more here. What country indicted a Washington Post journalist on unspecified charges this week? What country indicted a Washington Post journalist? What, sorry?
Iran,
that's correct. Gentleman over there. And one last one, we'll let you head out into the dark night. Okay. Kamala Harris got an endorsement and fundraising help from what possible future colleague this week? You didn't raise your hand, and you're wrong anyway. Sir? Sir? No. That's right, Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts. Well, listen, thank you. We're going to have much more news quiz questions and, of course, a lot more to discuss on Tuesday, February 17th at our next Week to Week program. Thanks to our panel, Bill Whalen, Lonnie Cheehan, and Carson Bruno, and thanks to all of you here in our audience listening online. Thank you for being our prize deliverer and everyone watching on TV. Have a great week.